Hello and welcome to All Africa's Focus on Peace Building in Africa, Silence the Guns. I'm Juanita Williams and today we speak about the role of young people in peace building, made all the more critical because of the continent's so-called youth bulge, which means that now more than half of Africa's population is under the age of 25, and by 2050, that population will reach over 830 million. At the World Innovation Summit for Education, aka WISE Summit, held in December 2021, one of the highlights was a session on peacebuilding as a way to explore the role young people play and how it affects education. Lakshita Saji Prelis, Director of Search for Common Ground and co-chair of the Global Coalition on Youth Peace and Security, moderated that discussion. First introducing Irene Griesel, who co-authored the collaborative 5-year strategy for the high-level global conference on youth-inclusive peace processes in Doha, Qatar in January 2022.
So I want to just highlight and emphasize some of the background to this output ahead of the Doha conference, which Saji has presented, noting that this strategic roadmap that I'll get into really focuses on a more specific component within the youth peace and security agenda, and complements the YPS guidelines that Selena will come in a moment, through focusing on the more specific area of peace and mediation processes. And I wanna recognize the 3 UN Security Council resolutions on youth peace and security, which call for the establishment of integrated mechanisms for meaningful participation of youth in peace processes, calling for inclusive representation of youth in the prevention and resolution of conflict, including when negotiating and implementing peace agreements, and recognizing that the participation of young people in peace processes can significantly contribute to the maintenance and promotion of international peace and security. And this framework roadmap that I'll get into really builds on the first global policy paper, which was launched 2 years ago in Helsinki, that really documented where and how young people shape peace processes and peace agreements, and why youth-inclusive peace processes are fundamental not only to the prevention of violence, but particularly to sustaining peace. So delving into that, and some of these points have already been raised, why do we talk about youth and peace processes? Why does it matter? We know that young people are often the largest demographic in countries with ongoing peace processes, and indeed, as Saji shared, the largest in the world today. For example, 72% of South Sudan's population is under the age of 30 years old. 67% of Afghanistan's population is under the age of 25 years old. And while over 1,000 peace agreements have been signed in the last 20 years, which is often the heart of peacemaking in a society that is undergoing conflict, there has been very limited attention and investment in the role and impact that young people have on peace processes. Young people also play an inherent role in the prevention of violence and sustaining peace. As documented in the We Are Here reports, young people demonstrate constructive and alternative channels to conflict resolution, often considered informal, but really fundamental in shaping the ground for sustaining peace and these formal processes. Young people often have long-term mindsets on peace. They focused on just issues that underpin healthy, peaceful, and equitable societies. Yet we find that they're seldom engaged as key strategic partners in building peace and co-leading conflict resolution. So really recognizing that there is both a political then and a demographic imperative to ensuring that peace processes are shaped by and supportive of young people's participation. This agenda, this strategy also recognizes that there is a rapidly changing conflict landscape. Violent conflicts are increasingly fragmented, protracted, and transnational. There's a rising prevalence and misuse of digital technologies. There's an escalating climate crisis and a global health pandemic. Traditional approaches are no longer as effective as previously. And so there's an urgent need to shift to a whole of society inclusive and long-term approach to conflict resolution and sustaining peace. And so coming then into what is this strategy? What is this roadmap that Saji has opened the floor for? So this is really a strategic action plan and builds on the title, We Are in This Together, to realizing more youth-inclusive peace processes. I want to emphasize that this has been a year-long, inclusive, transparent, and participatory process that has engaged almost 100 experts from across regional, international, and national organizations and contexts to really shape and take this strategy forward. Taking everything that's just been shared, the guiding vision is quite simple, that peace processes are supportive and shaped by young people's participation, ultimately realizing more inclusive and peaceful societies. The strategy has four key aims or objectives to lead us towards this vision. And that is that by 2026, we have established and strengthened political and institutional commitments to implement full and effective, meaningful participation of young people in peace processes, developing youth-sensitive and gender-responsive capacity-strengthening resources and knowledge tools to support youth engagement in peace processes, developing really a collaborative effort, a community of practice and partnerships to take this strategy forward, to implement, monitor, and collaborate. And finally, mobilizing sustainable resources and financing to realize the strategy's vision. The target really is the wide spectrum of actors, governments, mediation support units, civil society, international and regional organizations that are engaged in peace processes. And the aim is really to move from policy and norms to practice, from the why to the how of youth-inclusive peace processes. And that's to reflect the lived reality of young women and men in conflict and affected settings, really generating this holistic, long-term, intergenerational strategy that will create this environment for more youth-inclusive peace processes. Moving into briefly some of the substance of the strategy, it is founded and shaped by four key pillars or interconnected streams. And this is around institutionalization and policy, which is the systematic mainstreaming of youth-inclusive policies and practices within organizations and institutions. Capacity strengthening, which is about shaping and strengthening the attitudes, skills, and knowledge for more youth-inclusive practices, not only of young people, as is often assumed, but also institutional leadership, politicians, policymakers, civil servants, and civil society. Knowledge solutions is around building an evidence base. When we know more, we can do better. So this is around documenting the impact and best practice on how to include young people and how peace processes can be shaped by young people's participation. And finally, the strategy builds on the principle and the spirit of the Youth Peace and Security Agenda, which is founded on collaboration and partnerships for collective impact, really recognizing that our collective efforts together generate a stronger and a more sustainable impact than working in silo or segregated efforts. And this is the backbone through which we really want to take the strategy forward. There's a number of cross-cutting issues that underpin how to implement this strategy that really seek to do no harm in young people's participation and ensure that this is a meaningful strategy. And I can go into these perhaps in the question and answer, but this is around firstly, recognizing that security and protection of young people is fundamental in supporting their participation. Secondly, that recognizing young people are diverse, and so young people need to be considered from their different lived realities and experiences in conflict. Third, a strategy is only effective if it is funded with adequate resources to implement the actions. Fourth, communication. That's around harnessing the power of communication and shaping a new set of societal norms and the institutional acceptance of young people as necessary agents in the prevention of violence, in political decision-making, and in building foundations for peaceful societies. And finally, recognizing the potential of technology to both disrupt and facilitate peace processes. This is around harnessing innovation and digital technology in the design and implementation of more youth-inclusive processes. So just a few then closing considerations before we open the floor. The first is that we need to have a holistic shift in how we perceive and engage with young people. We must move beyond seeing youth as beneficiaries of peace processes, but as necessary partners and co-leaders essential in the prevention of violence and reconstruction of just and inclusive societies. This must be taken forward together and working together with young people. There must be buy-in from youth, and to ensure there is buy-in from young people, governments, international, regional, and national institutions responsible for peace efforts really need to reaffirm their relationship with young women and men as part of weaving a new social contract. And finally, and this has been raised before, there needs to be resources and serious commitment to this agenda. This includes mainstreaming of youth inclusive and gender responsive practices, but also investing sufficient resources to ensure that peace processes respond to the realities, challenges, and needs of young people of all genders within conflict societies, ultimately bringing us forward towards our common guiding vision of more peaceful, representative, and inclusive societies. I pause there and I thank you all. I open the floor for some questions and reflections.
Thank you, thank Irina. You. I hope you can hear the enthusiasm of the audience who is applauding to you, and I'm also hoping the online audience who is joining us also is applauding to you, because it's a very thorough presentation that you gave about a sneak peek. When I said a sneak peek, it was a really detailed, powerful presentation about what's going to be launched next month here in Doha, Qatar. So I'm going to open up for a few minutes to see if anyone from the audience has questions. There are mics on both sides. If you want to raise your hand, someone will come to you and you can ask questions. This is a conversation. This is not a one-way presentation. This is a conversation. So there are two questions. I'll come first there and then come here second. So Irina, you can hear us, right?
Hi, Irina. Thank you so much for all that you're doing. I was listening to you, and you were talking about the no harm policy. I love everything that's going on, but as a teacher, there is a part of me that youth have been beneficiaries because we're afraid. We want to protect them. And so if you could just elaborate more about the no harm policy and how we can have youth as equal partners without exposing them to unnecessary harm, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for the question. It's an important question. I'll come here. Leonardo has a question, and then we'll give a chance to Irina to respond.
Yes, thank you so much, Irina, for your question. My question is how to ensure the commitment of institutions and different governments to implement this agenda. We have been going with this for 5 years, 6 years already. Today's the anniversary. But when we see the progress on the ground and how meaningful is the participation of young people, that's the missing piece. That's something that's still lacking. So how can we push forward governments to really take this as a deep commitment that they have?
Wow, two important questions. I'm going to ask Irina to see if you can answer it, but also if Selena can also come in, because you're developing another guidance that the audience will hear from, who can also chime into this. So start with Irina.
Thank you so much for those questions. Those are really excellent points that you've raised. On the point of do no harm, this is really fundamental. We find that young people are already active and mobilizing and across different spaces. And I think it's the realization that we need to take that more seriously. It's not that young people are on the streets or seeking for participation or mobilizing different initiatives because they feel like it, but because it really has such essential contributions and it's a necessary component to an inclusive and a peaceful society. And so in the do no harm component, unfortunately, we find that young people in their striving for participation in different arenas, there are repercussions that they face, serious risks to their lives. And the various UN Security Council resolutions are calling for greater investment in protection of young people. So I see it as two ways. One, it's realizing that young people need to be taken seriously as partners, as co-leaders. And secondly, that in young people's participation, in creating spaces and opening these spaces, we cannot allow risks and repercussions in those spaces. We need to make sure that there are safe spaces in the negotiation room, as well as on the streets and civic spaces. So I hope that answers a little bit your question. And I think it's something that we need to continue to work on throughout this agenda. And ensuring these commitments, and thank you for raising that, Leonardo, that's critical. And that's what we're looking to do. And that's part of this event and also in the lead up to Doha, recognizing that, of course, change takes time, but also noting that there are small incremental steps we can take to not only commit, but then implement those commitments. And that's what the strategy seeks to do. We have, you know, next 5 years that we're looking to take steps towards more youth-inclusive peace processes, and the commitment of governments, of different institutions is fundamental in that, because partnerships and ensuring we do that together, it won't go far if we're not partnering. So I think it's, again, taking this seriously, making sure the commitments are serious and the investments, and taking those steps from the commitment to the implementation. That's a necessary step that needs to be taken moving forward. Thank you.
That was Irene Griesel, researcher, consultant, and trainer on youth peace and security, who co-wrote the 5-year roadmap after engaging with governments, mediators, young people, the European Union, African Union, and the United Nations. More than 50 countries are committed to joining the Youth Peace Processes Conference online, with foreign ministers, prime ministers, and presidents being present. The WISE Summit's peacebuilding session continued with Cameroonian peacebuilder Jone Shaden Epier, who is a project manager for Local Youth Corner Cameroon, a youth-led peacebuilding organization with over 20 years of experience. She also ensures gender mainstreaming at the organization and serves as the national program manager for the Commonwealth Youth Peace Ambassadors.
You've been at the forefront of taking these global policies, continental frameworks, and saying, what does this mean to us in Cameroon? And how us as young women and men lead a process and bring the government on board? Share with us what lessons you have learned and how you are leading this process in the country, Sharon. You do some amazing work with young people affected by terrorist activities also. So share with us what you're doing and what you're learning from it.
Well, thank you very much, first of all, for the opportunity to be here. I think that this is one of the reasons why young people want to be heard, because they want platforms like this where they can be able to express themselves and show what they have. So thank you, EAA and the WISE Foundation, for this opportunity. And before I get to the lessons learned, I'm going to talk about the reason why we even decided to engage in the localization of the YPS in Cameroon. Cameroon young people have been very much involved in peace building processes, in preventing and countering violent extremism, and even in transforming conflict and transforming violent extremism and de-radicalization processes. We as young people, we as youth actors, we involve ourselves in prisons, for instance, where we support violent actors or people who have been engaged in radicalization, in transforming them by vocational training activities within those prisons, where they can be able to learn that there are alternatives to violent extremism. We also do community dialogues, improbable dialogues, and so many other things which are related to building peace and countering violent extremism. But we realize that there are so many young people who are actually involved in these processes. We have a young person in the northwest region of Cameroon where there's conflict in the far north doing the same thing. But because we are kind of disunited, because we have so many great ideas, we have the energy, and the energy is not canalized into something big that we can actually be able to, you know, put ourselves together to be heard, it's always difficult for us to actually respond and have like the impact that we really want to see. So we decided to engage ourselves with the African Union, UNFPA, and other international organizations to localize the African Union Continental Framework on Youth, Peace, and Security, and to ensure that the voices of young people, irrespective of where they are in different communities from across the 10 regions of our country, are actually heard, and to ensure that their opinions and what they want to see within the National Action Plan is taken into consideration. So in October, we organized the first ever national symposium on localizing the African Union Continental Framework on Youth, Peace and Security, where we mobilized over 100 young people from the 10 regions, and particularly young people from the far north region, which is affected by the Boko Haram crisis, and those in the northwest, southwest affected by the Ambazonia crisis, if I would call it like that. And here, this was a platform where the different young people that were engaged expressed themselves. They spoke about the importance of us young people collaborating and working together to ensure that government takes seriously what we want to see within the National Action Plan. And some of the lessons that we learned, that we developed into some sort of roadmap towards which we will be able to implement the or develop the National Action Plan to inform over the next 5 years for Cameroon, was that we need to be able to build capacity, just as Dr. Roos was talking about, ensuring that young people have the necessary skills to be able to take action. Because it's one thing to have the energy, it's another thing to know how to effectively organize mediation processes, to be able to organize, to be able to monitor and even evaluate your actions at community levels. So that was one of the main things that the young people said they really wanted: capacity. And also at the level of seeing how we can be able to mobilize resources. With so many, let me just say that there are more than 500 civil society organizations in Cameroon. And among these 500, young people are very much active in it. And majority of them are very small, and having access to resources usually makes it challenging because you're too small, they cannot trust you with those kind of huge funds. So we realize that coming together through this National Action Plan will permit us to be able to work, develop concrete programs that can actually be sponsored by these organizations or by these stakeholders. We also realize the importance of engaging in stakeholders mapping, because in Cameroon, for instance, we have a lot of international organizations. We have a lot of government actors who are working with young people, who are supporting young people. But unfortunately, access is still difficult. For you, I remember when we were having a program that we were doing, we had to go to local administrations about 5 different times soliciting just for access, just to present the activity to them. So you can imagine, if it is that difficult at the local level, what more at the national level and even at the international level, where you hardly see those big guys. So realize that engaging in a stakeholders mapping and seeing those actors who can be able to facilitate, and even advocating that there are focal points for the Youth, Peace and Security agenda within those institutions that have been identified, to actually facilitate access for young people. And I mean, we realized a lot of different things that young people are interested in. And we also realized within this roadmap the necessity of having a monitoring framework for young people, a youth-led monitoring framework, which would also involve evidence-based research that actually informs what we want to do. So in the scope of everything that we discussed throughout this symposium, we have started working towards actually developing our National Action Plan. And in the next 2-3 months, we are going to be doing a national consultation, which is youth-led also. So the 100 young people that were identified are also going to restitute these same conferences or these workshops at local levels. And it's not just going to be young people alone, because in as much as we would recognize that young people make up 60% of the country's population, for instance, the remaining 40% is equally important, because they make the decisions, they have, you know, the governance and everything. So we ensure that these restitutions include traditional authorities, religious authorities. It includes IDPs because they too have something to say, and they're also affected by the conflict. It includes women because women are also among the most affected people, you know, during such conflicts. And also even includes children because children also have a role to play. And why not the military? Why not the police forces, because they are also at the forefront of security. So during these restitutions, we are going to do these consultations and find out what are the key things that we can be able to include within the National Action Plan. And also, these restitutions will enable us to be able to know that we have different conflict dynamics in Cameroon. The conflict in the Northwest Southwest region has a different dynamic. The one in the far north region has a total different dynamic. So we cannot say that we are just going to maybe do a national symposium and then impose it in the Northwest, impose it in the far north, impose it. We need to be able to actually take into consideration those different dynamics and then bring them all together to be able to develop something that reflects the diversity of young people and at the same time ensures that we are responding to these issues with one voice. So after the development of the National Action Plan, we don't want to end there. We don't want to say, okay, fine, we have this paper because it's going to be a paper. But after this, what are we going to do? How do we ensure that what is written down within this action plan is actually implemented? So we are going to ensure that we have, as I said before, a monitoring framework, a youth-led monitoring framework, a reporting mechanism that we can be able to show that, okay, those young people who have the opportunity to meet those big guys can actually talk for us, can be able to advocate for us, and can be able to report even to the lowest group of young people who are acting, and they can actually justify the actions that are being done. And even at the level of the government, ensure that the state has focal points where we can be able to reach out to them and work with them, which are targeting principally the Youth Peace and Security Agenda. I strongly believe that without us having these mechanisms that ensure that we can be able to stay accountable, it will be very difficult for us to actually achieve a sustainable action plan and also be able to see how far we have come, because when we develop the action plan 5 years down the line, we should be able to sit down and assess ourselves and say, okay, fine, this is what we achieved, these are the objectives we met, and this is what has to be done in the next other 5 years. So that's where we are for us. Thank you.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Way to commit. Way to commit. Thank you so much, Sharon, for your leadership and in this global agenda and how you're really taking ownership and making it yours. This is so critical. So thank you.
After listening to EPA's contribution at the summit, it was clear that she had more to share. So I asked her a few questions about her work, noting, of course, the ongoing Anglophone conflict in the northwest and southwest of Cameroon.
Well, my role entails developing projects, writing, developing concept notes and project proposals that are in line with community conflict prevention, conflict resolution, conflict transformation. I also engage in implementation, such as, from developing activity work plans, logical frameworks, and other planning tools, and then implementation on the ground. We go to the field where we engage with the community, we have organized the activities and then do evaluation at the end of every project, ensure that there is constant monitoring and follow up throughout the project. So those are some of the things that I do as project lead from within my organization. Well, I work principally with Local Youth Corner, but we co-collaborate with other organizations, other civil society organizations in Cameroon, especially those that are working on peace building in the northwest southwest region of the country, as well as in the far north region. And when we have activities, when we have programs, we engage with them, we collaborate, and then implement at local levels, even at national levels. And we also work with other international organizations, specifically within projects or within programs.
And so you say that you work in the southwest of Cameroon, and I think probably a lot of people want to know what's happening there right now and what kind of work, what kind of work you've actually done in the southwest of Cameroon where the Anglophone crisis is happening. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Basically, since 2016, the crisis in the northwest, southwest region began, and you know, we've had a lot of clashes specifically between government and what I would call the secessionists. And these crises have, I always like to talk about the consequences because a lot of people focus on, a lot of people are trying to find like the answers. And while you're trying to find the answers to the reasons why these things are happening, people are dying every day, whereas you can actually be able to focus on the consequences and see how to be able to respond to these consequences. So, I mean, what has been happening in the region has caused a lot of loss of lives, a lot of internal displacement, a lot of people, especially children, young people and women have been affected. And, you know, the crisis only keeps getting worse. Attacks on schools,